that is an alternative to white supremacist violence. And quite frankly, I don't think we get there through violence, but that is my take. That is what I learned. I hope folks get a chance to listen to the podcast that It Did Happen Here, podcast.com. Give it your own listen. Let us know what you think. Scott, appreciate you. Multnomah County Library, support your county library, right? Scott, always a pleasure, my friend. Good night.
Thanks for listening to this episode of It Did Happen Here. The transcripts, show notes with links, full credits, and other relevant content can be found at our website, itdidhappenherepodcast.com. Interviews in this episode were conducted by Annette Newell, Selena Flores, Claire Risciotto, Ender Black, and Aaron Yankee. And your hosts were Mike Crenshaw and Selena Flores. This podcast is produced by Selena, Mike, and me, Aaron Yankee. Thanks to the participants for sharing their stories. Thanks also to Lindsay Runyon and Enrique Rivera of the Multnomah County Library, the Institute for Anarchist Studies, PM Press, the Marla Davis Fund, KBU Community Radio, and to the rest of our production team, Icky A., Julie Perini, and Mo Baustern. And thank you for listening.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the second Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held. You probably know that KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored, but did you know that 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you? You can always make a donation to keep KBOO independent and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give, but right now, during our end-of-the-year drive, is the perfect time to contribute. Help us reach our goal of $70,000 by December 31st. Make your tax-deductible year-end donation at kboo.fm/give today. And thanks. Radio is the sound salvation.
Radio is cleaning up the nation. Here at KBOO, we honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on. The Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tomwater, Wetlala Bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin Kalapuya, and many other indigenous tribes and nations of the region of the Willamette River and that great river known as Shuaneku, Wimal, Nishaiwana, and Columbia. Many names for the living water force that has sustained this region for countless generations and provided phenomenal life to our blessed ecosystems. We believe it is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationships to each other and the living world. KBOO.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, for the working class, by the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hello.
Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have Alicia Chavez and Ginger Huizar. Welcome.
Hello.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us. We have been wanting to talk with you for a while, so thank you. Can you start out, both of you, by just telling us some about your teaching background and experience, or I should say your education background and experience?
I can go first. I am a kindergarten through second grade intensive skills classroom teacher. I believe that I'm going on my 9th year. I don't know, it tends to get blurry after 5.
And all at the same school?
All at the same school.
Great. Yeah. All right, and what about you, Ginger?
I just transferred into elementary school this year, but before that, I've been mostly a middle school special ed teacher for the past 5 years. I've worked as a middle school social worker in the past and as a curriculum developer.
Great. And then we also like to always know if you have union involvement, and we want our listeners to know as well. So talk about any elected positions or official union involvement that you have.
This is my maybe 7th year involved in the union, maybe 8th. And I currently am the interim secretary, as well as I sit on the executive board and the liaison to the Social Justice and Community Outreach Committee.
Great.
And Alicia has dragged me in this year to the union. So I'm an interim executive board member as well. And then the liaison to the Racial Equity Committee.
Gotcha.
Great. So recently, PPS special education teachers came together to plan a week of action. And before we talk about that, can you tell us what were some of the key issues that led to this organizing?
I believe it was the several emails and communication from special educators who were struggling in their classrooms, and not due to a lack of teachers being awesome, because teachers are awesome, educators are awesome, a lack of support from the district, and specifically from the PPS SPED department, and a high turnover rate of special educators in PPS. I don't know, Ginger, if you want to add some more.
Yeah, I think that was a lot of it. I know that there were also like really specific issues. the para shortage has impacted our focus classrooms the most this year. I think more than I've ever seen it. And I have a sibling who grew up in special education in Oregon. So that was a huge issue as well. The district made a lot of cuts and to services for special ed. And I know that the speech paths have been fighting, having to now become the feeding team.
Mm. Yeah, could you, for our listeners, just explain what a focus classroom is?
Yeah, focus classroom is a self-contained classroom. So within our district, we have 3 different types of focus classrooms. One would be the classroom that I teach in, which is called an intensive skills classroom. One being a communication behavior classroom, and the other being a social emotional setting. And then we also have other different types of classrooms, such as like Pioneer, or the DART programs, which are special programs. And Specifically, most self-contained classrooms, focus classrooms, have three paraeducators in the classroom to support an average of maybe 10 students-ish. Some classrooms are bigger than that. Some classrooms are smaller than that. And a lot of focus classrooms and even a lot of learning centers who were allocated paraeducators had one, maybe none at all. And they couldn't find them. I know I heard at Pioneer School there was a lot of openings, and I still think to this day, today, there's still about up to 13 or something openings still.
And so when you're talking about speech pathologists doing feeding protocols, are these things that they are trained to do?
No, they are not trained to do. Currently, within our district, we have one occupational therapist and one speech and language pathologist on the feeding team. And I think that the occupational therapists are half-time, so they share that position, but I'm not entirely sure. And they are the only people that support feeding protocols throughout the entire district, too. And then there also is a nurse that helps support them as well. And so this is like talking about like students eating and safety. So the potential of like, the potential is high that a student could possibly choke and be really harmed from not being able to support, because two people cannot support 85 schools.
And do you have a sense of approximately how many students would need support with feeding protocol? I mean, is it like five, or is it much higher than that?
I mean, I can tell you just from my isolated program at my school, there's 22 students together between my K-2 intensive skills classroom and the 3-5 intensive skills classroom, and we have 22 students, and about, I believe, 15 of them are on feeding protocols. So that's just one school, right? So they probably are consulting over 100 students, maybe even more.
Wow. And so aside from staffing issues, are there other things that came up in terms of supports that special education teachers are not receiving that are detrimental to student safety and also just to as educators' ability to fulfill the functions of their job?
I mean, I'm coming from middle school, so I know that, like, for those of us who serve the older kids, safety is a big issue. It has been a big issue since we came back from COVID. I think kids, you know, they were really highly impacted from the shutdown in many ways, and so we've had just a high incidence of unsafe behaviors. And when you are, for those of us who work in learning center, or if you're working in a socio-emotional support classroom, we are one teacher that's supposed to serve all of these students that have these kind of needs that around behavior and social skills and, you know, mental health supports as well. And when they get escalated or dysregulated, then sometimes kids have over-responsive reactions. And while you are their safe person, you are also the person who is oftentimes the responsible adult that can help to de-escalate them, and is expected to do that when everybody steps aside. Sometimes you're the only person who's trained to do that as well. And so there's been a lot of staff who've struggled with that because there's a lot of violence that ends up landing on us. In order to kind of help keep these kids regulated in our schools.
And so, what,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
And what we were experiencing a lot, hearing a lot about as special educators is we were not getting our dedicated planning time, as well as we were not getting duty-free lunch consistently because of all these things, because of the lack of staffing, because of the need to, for trauma-informed care and providing support for students who really needed it. And so we'll talk about a little bit about actions about that later.
So we leave some time for that. I'll just quickly, if you could say, were there things that were tried to get the district to address this issue before the week of action? And why do you think the district wasn't responsive?
I mean, I know several educators sent emails, have sent, had meetings with their program administrators. I mean, there were a couple of school board testimonies. There's been a lot of shifting within our upper admin, and a lot of admin who are new to the district as well. And so there was a lot of unknowns in the beginning, and then there was a lot of knowns that were not dealt with when people were vocalizing what was going on too.
Yeah, I think that they know. I mean, teachers are very, our special education staff, it is our like, part of our job is to advocate, including for ourselves. And we're great at that. And people are sending emails. They're letting their admins know. They're letting their program admins know. They're letting their TOSAs know. They're letting the district know. They're letting the director of SPED know. They know that what's happening. They know that most of us aren't getting our lunches. Our contracts are being violated, or constantly. Because our caseloads are too high and our needs are too high, and this comes down to we need more support, we need manageable caseloads. If you work in Learning Center and they can't give you a manageable caseload, then give us an EA. Most of our outer districts have EAs, that, education assistants that support the Learning Centers. Like, one person cannot do all of these things unless we work through the day and don't take our planning periods in classrooms like Alicia's, where if they don't have any additional paras in there, or they're down paras, then they have nobody to relieve them to be able to get breaks even. So the district is well aware.
All right, so listeners, if you're just joining us, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. Ginger, Alicia, so let's get into that week of action. Tell us about that. How did you come up with that idea? And what were some of the activities that were planned?
So really, how it started is there was a small steering group that met, as well as a larger listening session with special educators, being OTs, speech paths, school psychs, special education teachers, to discuss what's going on in the classrooms. And a lot of people were like, we need action. We need this to change. This is not sustainable for any of us. And so this small steering committee kind of designed this week of action. So it happened kind of behind the scenes, and it was a very, very quick turnaround. Because we wanted to end at the start of bargaining, because in one of the bargaining proposals, they were wanting to remove the language of a full continuum of special education services for our students. And that was not okay with us as special educators.
So they wanted to claw back some things in the contract. Okay. So that was what pushed you to move quickly on that. Gotcha. And so what were some of the things that you did during the week? Sort of take us through the week, at least some of the, I want to get to how the week ended, but what were some of the things that went on before that Friday?
Alicia made hundreds and hundreds of buttons. We had ordered, we decided that we'd start out with like a button campaign just to kind of raise awareness as our starting point. And so we had buttons for all of our special ed staff. And one was like, I heart special education staff or special educators. Another one was ask me how it's going to kind of as a conversation starter. Because many of us also feel like really isolated. We don't work in the same settings as our peers. And so oftentimes our gen ed teachers don't realize how it's going for us, sort of, I think. And then from there, we wanted to have get everybody else involved. And so we had a day of action to, you know, pack the school board meeting to raise awareness. Mm-hmm. And then there was the community to get the action to get the community involved.
Great. And then to talk about that march on the bosses, as I think you called it. Tell us about that. Who participated in that? What was your message? And how did the district respond?
Yeah, so that was to present a grievance to demand duty-free lunch, protected planning time, and safe work environments. There were families, there were paraeducators there. I mean, there was a lot of people there. It was great. The district closed the PSC prior to when they knew that we were going to be there. So we did not get to go into the district.
They closed it up because they heard you were coming and they locked the doors.
And so the head of HR and the head of student services, I think what their title is now, sorry, tends to get jumbled, came out and met us outside. There were chants, there were beautiful signs, media was there as well. And when the thing that I remember is when we presented the grievance, one of the people said, thank you. That was something that I was just like, oh my goodness. There were also speeches from special educators too.
Okay, and then so I imagine that then they went, you know, they waved goodbye and they went back inside. And have you heard anything since from them? No, crickets. So why do you, I mean, do they say anything? Do they say, oh, well, we're trying to hire people, but we just can't right now? Or what are they, what's their excuse? What are they saying?
I have no idea what they say because there hasn't been a response. Like there has been no, in a world where we respect our educators, if there was such a thing, the response might have ideally been, since they like to send us emails to at large, it could have been a system-wide email that said, hey, we seen your week of action. We heard you. We want to reiterate to you that we do care. So, you know, just even an acknowledgement that we are working, you know, towards these concerns to be met. But there was nothing, there was no response. There hasn't been a response. There has been no follow-up. And the way that I paid attention to bargaining, the way that that Title IX bargaining went, I don't think that they really felt like our SPED concerns were as big of an issue as we feel that they are, it seems like, because it just didn't seem like they were on the same page with us.
And we did get an email from our deputy superintendent of instruction the morning of the march on the bus, and it wasn't to us, it was to the community, because prior actions were community-based emails, and basically it said, you know, we're committed to high quality and equitable learning experiences for our students with disabilities, and here is, you know, the things that we have been doing. And in one of the speeches, me and another speech and language pathologist debunked every single fact, quote unquote, that they stated exist within our special education system and services.
So they just did a PR blitz right before your march on the buses. Nice. Well, in the short amount of time, we probably have 2 minutes for this question, 2 or 3 minutes. On reflection, what are some of the successes of the whole campaign, and what are some things you learned in the process?
Go ahead, Alicia.
Some of the successes, I think, you know, like Ginger had said prior, being a special educator is very isolating. You're alone in the building sometimes. Maybe you're the only special educator. Maybe you have teaching partners. Maybe. It was beautiful to see the community show up. It was beautiful to see other educators show up. And it was beautiful to see our union listen to special educators genuinely and authentically. And you know, special education is an issue for all. It's, you know, harm to one is a harm to all of us. And I was happy to see that really meant something.
Yeah, I think that I think that the issues within special education have been long coming, and education is always rob Peter to pay Paul, and oftentimes we're slowly robbing special education to try and get some things over here, or robbing over here to try and push these things, and so like we're getting to a place where you can only take so much from special education, because we are we're in debt now. There's nothing left to take, and that's how it feels. And when it becomes, I think that when special education becomes an issue for everyone at large is when it's going to matter the most. And I think that's where we're headed, is that it's starting to become an issue that's
Ginger froze.
Impacting school-wide, and people are, did I freeze?
Oh, you came.
Sorry. but yeah, I think that, I don't know where I froze at, but just that it has to be an everyone issue. And I think that we're starting to move in that direction, and people are feeling that. And it's only going to get worse if people don't come together around the issues, because we have we may have the highest rate in Oregon of students with disabilities that are in our a school district. We have 1 in 5 students that has an identifiable disability in PPS in our classrooms. So that is everyone's children, right? That's everyone's children. It has an impact in everyone's child's classroom and every school in our district. So it is an everyone issue. And the more that we can make that a known and a felt concern, the more that we can raise awareness about it. I just think that that's when I see that, like as a disabled person and as a parent of a disabled child, those are big, for me, those are big feelings, because it's like, it's very often very siloed. I also like, I seen that we got some, there was some coverage, in other areas about our action. And there were other districts that reached out and said, hey, we seen that you were doing this. We're interested in doing this, you know, and I think that's a big thing, because this is an issue that's nationwide when it comes to special education that's struggling. And so the more our school districts can try and take from us, the more our unions can lean in and learn from each other. And that's something that I think is really important that we need to continue to work towards.
Well, thank you both so much, Ginger and Alicia, for joining us on KBOO. Thank you to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show.
Hi, this is Dwight Yoakam, and you're listening to KBOO.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now.